said talk to me, damn it, or else I'm gonna throw you in the fire!
You stupid bitch, you filthy!
Happy holidays, everyone. It's the Flyover State of Fear holiday special. Me and Brian got a great episode cooking for you. We're talking Christmas Evil. How are you, Brian?
Oh, good, Joe. Hey, I'm sorry I didn't match your level of festiveness, but I would like to wish everyone a happy credit card debt season.
Ooh, yes. It just adds up, right? Especially like when you got to get stuff for kids. Well, you know when you got to get stuff for kids, but like, I've started to have to get stuff for kids myself now.
Yeah, that's expensive.
But like, it's like my nephew. We're like, we'll go, we'll get him something like whatever the coolest truck is. But then like the girl, there's like three or four girls for the most part, I think, all be, but almost only to the age of four. So I'm like, cool, you'll just get Barbies. They're all $15 now.
Everybody's that's getting fun. Barbies, baby. It's gonna be a big year for Barbies.
Yeah. That might be more complicated now than not. Anyway.
Look for the actual Margot Robbie Barbie. You'll never find that thing.
No. Should have bought it at AMC when I had the chance. Well, it was a scam because we bought the popcorn bucket for the Fast X because it was Dom's charger. I was like, oh, this would be dumb to have and a waste of $40, but we bought it. When we went to see Barbie, we were like, it'd be so funny to get the matching convertible with Dom's charger. But they put a Barbie in it, so it was $60 for the two, and we're like, no.
Not worth it. No.
Not worth it. Doing anything fun for the holidays or, you know, in the horror world or just in general in your life?
No, you know, I mean, holidays for me mean seeing people that I only see once or twice a year.
Mm-hmm.
I like these people. But probably I like them more because I only see them a couple times a year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But you know, I like the holidays. You know, we not just the expense, but like the kind of like mandatory, obligatory gift giving thing bums me out. Like, I just hate when you go to like a Kohl's or a Target and they got those little stands of just like junk.
Oh yeah.
Like, Here's the thing to get somebody who you don't even know what they want. They definitely don't want this, but since you have to give them something, here's a tabletop game of fucking cornhole or some dumb shit. Like, it's the worst.
Here's a shaving kit where they probably don't need it because they're 35 years old and
haven't shaved. I did tell my mom to get me beard oil if she saw beard oil out.
That is something that's a good
stocking stuffer.
Yeah.
Beard oil.
No, I know exactly what you're talking about because I've bought that. I'm struggling. I don't even know what
everybody's gotten some kind of multi-tool or a fucking a cologne kit, you know, with bath stuff and shit in it. It's
a joke book.
Like I said, a little tabletop or an office portable golf game or a little,
it's becoming almost
all sorts of dumb crap, a thing of puzzles.
It's becoming almost a tradition though, for myself, no one else. I get other gifts, but my mother-in-law is obsessed with Christmas Vacation, and every year there's a, in those junk pile, there's a new Christmas Vacation type of branded card game or board game.
Yeah,
and
sure.
I think I bought her three different ones, all virtually the like dumb rules that are unplayable that they just slapped a Christmas Vacation logo on it.
Yeah, the board game industry, it's wild how big the board game industry still is.
Mm.
Like, you go into a Target, they have, like, a whole wall.
Oh, yeah. And
they're not cheap, either. I was going to buy the Jaws one, and then I was looking up something about it, and they were like, this thing is so complicated. Like, there's all these crazy rules, and I was like, I just want to jump around. I want to, like, go around a board and maybe answer some trivia. I don't want a whole thing. I don't want to do a strategy based Jaws game. You know?
They're all they're anything like that of that level. The Christmas Vacation ones are more of like match the lights together or something. But the Jaws one and things like that, we have one. We were gifted one, a Fast and the Furious one. And it's the same thing. We didn't play, but reading the things, it's just like you're doing a train heist on the board. Yeah. It was very like, oh, yeah, no, this is kind of funny to put up. But like
a role-playing game.
You know? Yeah. I see, because I see the one for
everything's
like...
Everything's trying to be D&D, you know?
Yeah, I see the one all the time for like Halloween, and like there's an alien one. There's ones that I'm like, oh, these are cool IPs, but like don't spend $35 on this on me, please.
Yeah.
Anyway, before we get into Christmas Evil, have you watched any? I mean, for all listening, I mean, behind the veil, we're recording this in November, at the start of December, basically, end of November. So I'm just starting to get unburnt out from the, like, two-month, like, barrage of September, October.
The spooky season.
Yeah, the spooky season. So the last thing I watched that was horror, like, hard horror, and I kind of put a pause on it after, until really Christmas Evil just now, is When Evil Lurks. That was like the hotness of October, and man,
that's still a very brutal one to go. You know what I mean? Like, if even if you've taken a break, if you come back from that break and watch When Evil Lurks, you're right back up to that level.
Brutal, brutal. I know. I watched the other morning. Anyway, I get the hype. I highly recommend. Great movie. Can't wait.
Yeah, but I mean, definitely, it's not for the faint of heart.
I'll say this. Usually, you know how I'm like, I wake up at, and same with you, I wake up at 7 a.m. or 6 a.m. and I'll watch something like One Evil, the most brutal shit that's not. The other morning I was watching the complete op. I was like, finally, just watching like normal, like The Waterboy.
Yeah, there you
comedy,
go.
You know. It was very cute. My nephew was like, because I had a shirt that said watch scary movies, and he's almost 3. And I was like, he's like, I want to watch a scary movie. Obviously, I can't show him a scary movie. I put on Hotel Transylvania 2, and he was like, this isn't scary. And I was like, yeah, but it's fun, though, right? Like, your mother will kill me if I...
Right, right. I can't, like...
Yeah.
You gotta bust out those... he's perfect age. Bust out those Universal monster movies. They're harmless.
Another year.
Put on the Mummy. He'll just take a nap.
Yeah, another year. I have a video, though, of him going, scary movie. And I was like, I didn't teach him that. He just...
It's your fault for teaching him how to read. If he couldn't read my shirt, he wouldn't know.
Listen, he picked the shirt out. I wore it. He saw my excitement. He matched it. Anyway, it warmed my little heart.
It's a holiday, a beautiful holiday story.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to say, as far as what I've been watching.
Yeah, actually, what have you been watching?
Obviously, I could go back through my now watching all the time, but I actually had the day off today. It was a spontaneous day off. I didn't know what I was going to get, and I got an extra day off, which is all, you know, it almost never happens. It was a very nice surprise. So I spent it relaxing and watching movies. And so I watched a newer to me. It actually came out in 2015. I believe it's a Polish movie called The Lure. It's about mermaids. It's kind of a monster movie. It's also kind of a musical, and it's kind of a... like a glam burlesque movie. It's a very interesting. It was very good though.
Where'd you find that?
It's on Max. People can find that on Max. 2015, I think I said. It does have subtitles, so sorry, but you're gonna have to get over that. And then I went back to one that I hadn't watched in a while, but I've been, you know, it's the way of the world these days, and you know, I thought it was a perfect time to do some light reading. So I've been reading the Pulitzer Prize winning Art Spiegelman graphic novel Mouse about the Holocaust. But that put me in the mood for some World War II shit. And so I put on Overlord. And
I was
Overlord.
Yeah.
J.J. Abrams produced, came out, how was it, 2017, something like that?
A little earlier, but yeah, it was like the hotness there.
It's one of those like horror movies that's like a big flash and then kind of goes away and people forget about it. But it's a pretty good, pretty brutal, pretty cool little movie.
Have the same vibe of the Nazi zombie movie. Was it Dead Snow? It had that same.
Yeah, similar. Yeah.
Yeah, Overlord. I get those two confused. Dude, that's a fun day. That's a fun like watch day you had there with. That and yeah, we're in the season before we get in. There's like some really fun winter and like holiday horror. I feel like, and it's been more. I think it's got, those movies have gotten stronger than old. Stuff like Krampus and Better Watch Out.
You still get plenty of schlock that comes out every year.
Like Santa vs. Krampus, like you get all that shit. Or
what was the one that came out with those last year? It was like the Robot Santa. You got that one.
Yeah, there was my cousin keeps begging me to watch the Grinch, the horror Grinch movie.
Oh, there's a horror Grinch movie too.
It's the mean one. It's doing what Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey did. It just took the IP. And it's the dude who was Art the Clown is like the Grinch.
Okay.
But he keeps talking about it. I'm like, I'll check it out eventually. I know the low level of what this is.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and there's different, like, I don't know, this is a good, we're segueing here, I feel, mm-hmm. very naturally into Christmas Evil. A couple of years ago, I want to say like 2017, I think it was, I made an effort to just like watch as many Christmas horror movies as I could get my hands on mm-hmm. and just like pour through ones, older ones that I hadn't seen. That might have been even around the time that I got myself more familiar with Black Christmas and stuff. Mm-hmm. And this was, Christmas Evil was one. And I watched a lot. When you watch a lot of those, you see a lot of like crazy Santas or like wacky, you know, mm-hmm. kind of goofball stuff, and Christmas Evil was one that really like stuck out to me as something a much different and much more. It's got a lot more like, you know, I hate to say but pathos to it, and it's like got a lot more to say about. It's actually like kind of unsettling to watch. It's not necessarily fun.
It's not a fun watch. It's a sad portrait of just like man's mental health, who you're like,
yeah.
At one point, why did no one put you in some sort of institution?
Right. And then, and we'll get into it too, but that, like, it's got a very like interesting family dynamic element with his brother and stuff that I think, and like the reasons that he's the way he is. And I don't know, it just stuck out to me as more than your average slasher. And I'd never heard of it, never seen it. And I, like I said, I was like pouring through movies where Santa was the killer. You know, and this was like a much different experience. So this is one of those situations where I feel like I really was like, I got Joe. Now I'll make him watch the movie I like so I can talk about it.
Of course. Because I was like, what should we do? And you're like, Christmas Eve. I was like, all right, great. And my first thought of it was, okay, we're doing, not immediately, but like that Goldberg, like Santa Slay movie, you know, like,
yeah, sure.
or like a Silent Night, Deadly Night, or something like the first episode of Tales from the Crypt, right? Yeah, like all through the house.
Also, they do that same vignette in the 72 Tales from the Crypt movie also.
I didn't know that.
It's good too. I just ended up picking up the Shout Factory Blu-ray that had that and Vault of Horror on it.
I see that all the time. I'm like tempted to buy, but I've
watched. Having two brand new horror anthologies that I was unfamiliar with, so fun.
Next time we have those sales running around, just be like, Joe, buy it.
That's gonna be, and that'll probably be a cheap one too. A lot of those.
I don't even think
it's a really good price.
I think that one's always like $15 or something.
Yeah.
But anyway, but this movie itself, it was like, this is like a one and done director, Lewis Jackson. It's like his passion. I was doing a little reading about it. Like he took like. Basically started writing in the early 70s, and then when Halloween popped off, he got the funds to make this, because it's a great holiday horror. Originally, I mean, it's Christmas Evil everywhere, but in the movie, it's You Better Watch Out.
Actually, there's a little interview on my Blu-ray with the director, and he talked about how like Christmas Evil was never his title. That's mm-hmm. something that when it went to DVD, they did to like, or they went to home video, they did to kind of differentiate it and stuff. Yeah,
yeah. And the irony is, the other Christmas horror movie holiday horror movie we covered is Better Watch Out, the like 2012. You can check that out with Janine. But no, that's funny because you own the this movie's actually gotten I'll read the synopsis in a minute. This movie's actually, I thought it was pretty interesting.
It's got a vinegar syndrome.
I would say it's got two different like boutique really three different boutique releases. Vinegar Syndrome's the big Blu-ray one that you just showed. Something I mean, it has a 4K master of it. I mean, and a director's cut of it as well. That's something I'd eventually like to own. It's probably out of print. And it carried over. So earlier in that, it did Synapse Films, which is another like boutique kind of label. Did that, and it had a. It's John Waters' favorite Christmas movie, so he has a whole commentary on the Synapse one. And then its first release was a Troma release, which makes fucking sense.
There's some special features that were like clearly filmed for the Troma release are on this Blu-ray as well.
I was just gonna say, so the like Vinegar Syndrome does so well, is it carried over all of those commentaries from Troma and Synapse, and like you had all of that and combo, and so it's a good release. But it's cool to see something like this has not just shitty production later, actual care and all that. But I think this movie deserves more than that, because you see, after watching it, you know, it's in like a reading Letterboxd people and this and that, like it's just like this trash movie, this and that. And you think, for me, I'm like, oh, it's going to be something like Silent Night, Deadly Night 2, or like the Ice Cream Man with the, you know, or whatever, like
Dr. Giggles
or the Dentist or something. Yeah, and it's not, it's Holiday Taxi Driver, Holiday Joker, you know,
Holiday like, Seven.
Yeah. But it's synopsis.
I definitely had the vibe of like Harry is John Doe from Seven, if like his focus was Christmas, you know?
Oh, I wasn't seeing it that way. Okay. Yeah. I was seeing it more like, I don't know. We'll wait from that. No, I was just seeing this, like he has this one particular way of like what Christmas is. And that's his life and this, that, and people it's kind of also like falling down at the same time where it's just like, can't take it anymore. Like,
He is set, like you're talking about falling down. He has like a set standard in his mind of what it means to be Santa, what Christmas means, how people need to behave and act. And like, he gets mad when people don't reach that level, but he also gets mad at himself for not reaching that level. So we can get into it more.
Yeah. Well,
you want to read the, synopsis.
Yeah. So I was saying, so we usually read the synopsis, and I think for a while it really has been accurate. From the first line, this is oof. Comical festive frights. A toy maker who revels in the Christmas spirit suffers a mental break when his work is met with hypocrisy and cynicism and goes on a Yuletide killing spree. I mean, technically it's not wrong, but I would never call this movie comical or even refer to him as like there's too much like pun work going on in the synopsis.
Yeah. Yeah.
Brian, can you give me your synopsis?
Well, I mean, like, I would say a boy is traumatized in his youth, and he gets his kind of wires crossed between his like frustrated sexualization and his love of Christmas, and that just builds kind of unchecked through his whole life, because he has basically like a brother who just sees him as like a burden and doesn't do anything to try to help him. And then it like kind of all comes to a head when he tries in some ways successfully, in some ways not, to like live up to the ideal of Santa Claus.
Yeah, that's a good way. That's a good way to kind of put it. So our main guy is Harry, who is, and this is really the only fun fact I do have of this movie, is Fiona Apple's father.
Yeah, yeah.
The actor. So just interesting there. And now I know way too much about Fiona Apple's lineage, that like this man had five kids, and this is with his, he had two with this woman who was never his wife.
His name's Brandon Maggart, right?
Brandon Maggart, yeah.
And he's also got a daughter named Margot Maggart, who's also a singer.
Mm.
She's just not Fiona Apple.
Yeah. So this is Fiona Apple, who who goes by, I think, her mother's last name. Or birth-wise. Anyway.
Another quick, if you want Welcome a little, to the other Apple little cast. Bit of tidbit since we're doing them. He was also part of the original cast of Sesame Street.
That's fun. He was, I'll say, I actually, one of my later notes is, I think contrary to what some of Letterboxd said, I think the acting in this movie is fucking excellent.
Oh, I think he's really
good. Or I should say all of everyone. I just say him. He's really good.
Well, he has a lot. I mean, he literally has to carry it and any emotion. And I do think, especially in the beginning, because they make him kind of a pitiable sad sack who you have to feel for before he turns. So he sells that he's like you empathize with him. He's emotional enough to draw that out.
This is a bad comparison because there's a lot of movies like this, but the terrible movie with John Travolta, The Fanatic, has a lot of similarities to this movie. And I know John Travolta is going full mental illness in that movie, and it's a completely different thing, but there's such they share a DNA that I'm not comfortable with this movie and that movie. But anyway, we start right, and immediately, they're fought Santa. It's the 40s, is down the chimney.
I was gonna say, he's doing it, he's trying to set up for a Gremlins opening here. And not only does he come out of the chimney,
he's clean,
does his little thing. You know, the mom's there with the kids, they obviously have it all set up. Mom's with the kids on the steps,
we're gonna watch Santa Claus.
To watch Santa Claus come out, he comes out, but then he goes back up. How do you think he does that? Do you think he has a bar and he just draws his legs up?
Probably,
because the effect is really good. He really zips up the chimney.
You know what?
It might just be a reverse shot of him coming down, and that's what they did for the movie, but in I guess my mind just got stuck on how is dad actually making that happen?
Yeah, and they time it to be all right, we got to get the kids back up. Dad has really good upper body strength.
He's crouched up. He's holding his legs up there in the chimney, and then he comes back out once they go upstairs or whatever.
He probably is frogging it or at least you said
but
a
shot. The thing is, he doesn't hop. He doesn't hop up the chimney. He levitates up the chimney. You know what I mean?
That was probably just for artistic effect.
I know how they did it for the movie, but I'm just saying in the reality of my mind, how do you think dad made it happen?
I'm saying dad didn't do it in reality of mine. I'm saying dad really was just artistic effect of dad probably stood in there and did that. Yeah. And kids were okay, Chipotle's we got to get the fuck up there. And
he's hurry up, I can't do crunches. This is the 40s.
I need to.
I don't have abs.
I need to go down on you, my lot. So that's where this is why this is I think, and this is.
The intro, Santa kissing mommy's
boobs. This movie is the antithesis of Santa mommy. I saw mommy kissing Santa Claus. This is the effects of that song. Brian just lovely just saying is he is honestly. I'm here. This is the kids are in bed. You guys are getting freaky in your own home.
Do a little role play. You got the Santa suit's out already.
What? It's always fun to start standing up like that. Good on you. Good on
you. But you know what? They should have been paying closer attention because Harry and Phil are upstairs arguing about the reality of Santa Claus, and Harry decides he's going to storm down and I don't know,
confront his mom
or something. And he sees some shit that fucks him up forever.
And it's crazy. If we were to remake this, right? Let's take out all the goofy 70s editing and things like 80s editing. There's some of that in here. If we were to make this, whoever the new director would be, it would just be maybe it wouldn't show up, but it'd be it's very sensual what we see. It would be hardcore, something that would truly traumatize.
It wouldn't be romantic. It wouldn't be like you said, sensual. At least he sees his parents in an act of love. It's not repellent,
It's not pulling anal beads out of her ass.
Right,
you know?
Right. It could be a lot worse, to be fair.
And she's it's still traumatic. Thing is also, he runs upstairs and he throws a snow globe on the ground. And breaks it and cuts him. I was like, oh, what bad parents do for not hearing a loud bang through this house, being, oh, fuck, we have two
small. They were having a loud bang of their own, if you know what I'm saying.
Well, and then it's like, they're setting everything, it's all gets set up right there. The weird mix of sex and Christmas and violence and blood is all just like, and that just like, war, like Harry's it mind, is, just like in that moment, that's it for him. He never comes back.
And he's the older brother too, which is more interesting, right? He's the younger brother.
No, he's the older brother.
He's the older brother.
His Phil, who is when he's grown up, is played by Jeffrey DeMunn, who is like a Frank Darabont actor. If you ever watched, he just talked about The Mist. He's in The Mist. He's in Green Mile. He probably shows up in Walking Dead.
I think he's in The Majestic too.
He's in The Majestic. Yeah, he's a Frank Darabont guy.
Yeah.
But he's yelling later in the movie about how he wanted an older brother to look up to.
That's why I was like, I'm pretty sure, because he talks about it. He's like, I don't fucking know, man. It was six.
Yeah.
You know, like a fair statement of that brother. I do. And then I love the, we could just get, the credits from the blood in the snow globe. And we go right to like just this portrait of this guy's morning routine, and we see his
every day is Christmas Day.
And I have one critique of this: decorate the apartment more Christmased up for me. I wish it was a little like, and I say this as like you and me like shit, like me and you both like, collecting stuff and having things. There needs to be like more, like I felt like I have like, I feel like I don't have that much horror stuff, and I have like more horror stuff in his than he
would. Yeah, if he was like that obsessed with Christmas, you would think it would be even more filled up. I'm sure that's just a production budget.
Yeah, thing, no, it's a budget thing. This movie
costs like $750,000 to make, so
this is a bad critique. But no, we immediately get the vibe. This guy loves fucking Christmas. This is
his pajamas are like red silk. He looks like the one Tim Allen's wearing when he wakes up in the Santa Claus. Mm-hmm.
He has the little hat on. He has a big sign in the background that's like 55 days to Christmas. Like
he's doing shaving foam beards. He's doing the whole nine yards.
I mean, truly, and he's only excited. That's why I thought this guy was doing a pretty good job of acting. The way his excitement that he has toward himself in the mirror when he thinks of Christmas and that shit.
Yeah.
Like he has a good, so he does that. And we follow him, and he works at a toy factory. How convenient. Was it Jolly?
Do we see him go to the toy factory first, or do we see him doing some spying on the neighborhood kids first?
Oh, you're right. So they're a little interchangeable, I think, with the plot, but it's creepy.
No, it doesn't matter. I just was wondering. The idea of him, like, he's doing the Santa thing where he's, like, making his list. So it's he's, so like, creepy. Spying on little kids and, like, it's seeing what they're up to. Moss Garcia is cool, right? We all want to hang out with Moss Garcia.
Moss, one of my notes, what kind of fucking name is Moss? But also, he...
Of course he's on the naughty list because he's fucking cool, man.
Yeah, Moss Garcia. No, there's a gang of kids, like there's like a few neighborhood kids that he just peeping Toms his way. Because at first I was like, oh shit, it reminds me of the joke intro of fucking... little Nicky of John Lovett sitting in that tree being like, all right, be a good bird for mommy. Like he's out there with his binoculars, going to these kids' rooms. He's like, oh, good, you're good. Taking the trash out. What a sweet girl. She's playing with her doll. And then, like, Moss Garcia is, like, reading a penthouse.
He's, like, cutting some pictures out of a penthouse.
Yeah, and he freaks out. Like, this man has such problems.
He goes running back downstairs.
Why he didn't bring the books with him or has a notepad? Beats me.
Yeah, he can make notes and then just transferred into the book later. Right?
And he has these beautiful leather bound yearbooks. Like it's each year. It says 1979, 1980. Like you could see the 80, like you see the years on the spines. And in beautiful, what we'd all imagine, Santa cursive. Mm-hmm. Good.
He's like got these lists that he's got their name and they're like these notes about them. And he pulls out
the naughty one. Writes, impure thoughts, but then he writes bad hygiene. What Wait, what gave that? There was no indicator because he cut out of centerfold.
He just thinks he stinks. He walked. He smelled Mars Garcia. He doesn't smell good. It smells bad.
Well, Mars Garcia's mom looked like, you know, she just like they looked like they had a struggling family business. They don't need this fucking piece of shit.
Just you know who that is? That's the thing. That's how you know the special features on this Blu-ray are older than the that are from the trauma release, because in like multiple interviews, people talk about how the most famous person in this movie is Moss Garcia's mom, because it's Patricia Richardson, who played Tim Allen's wife on Home Improvement. So it's like this, that trauma release must have come out in like the late 90s or like early
2000s, this is 2000. When she was
like at the peak of her powers.
Like Home Improvement was still. Yeah, it was 2000.
Still, at the very least, it was still fresh in everybody's mind. You know what I mean? Like, that Patricia Richardson was still like a household name.
That's another good fact. Okay, so, and she slugs him when we get to that scene.
Oh, man. Okay, we'll get there.
Next?
So he works at, what is it? Jolly Dream Toy Factory.
Jolly Dream Toy Factory, and every
toy. Recently got a promotion. Now, what I found out from the deleted scenes that the movie doesn't tell us, he very recently got a promotion. He's worked on the line forever. He came up with the idea to bring back the toy soldiers that we see.
Okay.
They're his design, and they like the idea and everything, and they're popular, but he's upset that they're the cheap plastic. Mm. He wanted them to be made of lead. He's like, they're only good if they're made of lead.
So he's pouring lead later on.
When he's making his own toys. But that's what I'm saying. The deleted scenes, you get a little bit of extra, and you find out that this good idea is the reason he got the promotion that we find out in the movie that he hates. He'd much rather being on the line and making toys. He doesn't like being in an office.
Yeah, because he has autism, and he's good at this one task. Or saying his one task is what he feels purpose for.
Yeah.
But
like how even... That's like, he was, you know, he's worked there for a long time. So when he got that job, he was already baby stepping his way toward the Santa thing. He's mm-hmm. like, what's the first thing in the real world I can do that's like Santa? Work in a toy shop, mm-hmm. you know?
And a Christmas themed toy shop.
Yeah, specifically Jolly
Green. And every toy is red and blue. It's the only colors that come in. Red
and they're all cheap goddamn garbage.
Oh, they're cheap as fucking toys.
Oh, they're like, so bad.
Like, I get, like, budget and stuff, but you look at those toys in any movie and you go, no one's buying this shit. Another note I immediately have, though, I wrote it around this scene, is, like, today this guy would be like, oh, you know who's really funny? Ben Shapiro. Because he's just such an incel.
This is the guy, or it's like you wouldn't even, like, engage him because he wouldn't be able to go more than a couple seconds without... like suggesting a right wing podcast to you.
Like we gotta keep Christ and Christmas, guys.
Yeah, he's like, you start talking about Christmas, he's like, but you know what I'm mad about? The cups at Starbucks. You're like, you know what, I gotta go.
Do you know they took Santa Claus off the shirts at Target? Or I don't know. Something stupid like that. But anyway, so like this guy, my point being is the guy reigns true today. Like the incel has only grown because that's what this.
But I was talking earlier, I do think they do a pretty good job because you see him getting bullied at work mm-hmm. and stuff.
No, it's a good.
They do make him pitiable enough that you feel bad. You start from a place of feeling kind of bad for him.
I feel bad. I felt bad for him. He's always humming Christmas tunes.
Like, you better, but then it doesn't take long because it's like right after this that he's creeping on his brother. He's like at his brother's house, peeping in his brother's windows,
and watching him
bang his old lady, having weird feelings about memories about his mom.
I was gonna say they flash to what his parents had did, and then to his brother, because you keep seeing the hat shots of the house, and you're just like, wow, beautiful home.
I think the Santa thing is all mixed up with sex too. Like anytime Harry gets a little like overexcited about, not that there's a lot of that, not that it's like heavy handed with that, but like that element of Harry is totally repressed and replaced with the Christmas thing. Mm-hmm. Like he doesn't let that part of himself out at all, you know?
No.
So seeing his brother like that, like short circuits him.
Mm-hmm.
Which is probably why he doesn't come to Thanksgiving.
No, yeah, and then we're still at Thanksgiving, and his brother calls him up because his sister-in-law is like, just give your fucking brother a break, man. I actually like that scene a lot. She's just like, it's his day. You're like, let him have these holidays, kind of. Clearly, they know he loves Christmas.
They clearly know. And, like, that's another thing I want to talk about when we talk about the brother anyway. It's like, he clearly knows there's something going on with Harry. Mm. And has been for a long time. Like, have there been any attempts? It seems like mostly you just berate him about not being normal. Have there been any attempts to, like, get him any help or talk with him a little bit? Like,
definitely what I think she's getting at there. It's like, just let him have his day. It's fine, man.
I also think that Harry has a little crush on his brother's wife, too.
I would. She's pretty. but I think so too. Yeah, I think that's a good observation. And but anyway, the attempt doesn't work anyway. He calls him, the man's getting fucking his rocks off to the parade, to the Christmas part of the parade.
I love there's a moment there where Harry is cranking the parade while they're on the phone, and his brother yells at the kids to turn because he thinks the parade's they're the ones who have it up loud. I love that little moment. It's just like a little beat where they're like, it's loud, we don't have it turned up. But Harry's just like, he's like obsessed with it. He loves it.
There's Santa.
Santa's coming on the fucking parade. And then some protesters for Palestine got in the way of the float, and they couldn't see it. They had to cut away.
Well, how timely.
Sorry, that was this year, my bad.
Yeah, how timely. and Yusuf cut that out. I'm kidding.
No, don't. I want to get blacklisted. It would mean I'm important enough to get blacklisted from something.
Sure. Guys, if you make it 50 minutes into this Flyover State of Fear episode, Brian says some pretty fucking controversial shit.
You better watch it all the way. You better report me. You better report me to your other friends so they can also watch it and get outraged. Tell everybody.
We'll make it. You'll see us on the rounds of the news stations eventually. Like, we're just trying to get our piece out there, man.
It's gonna be me. I'm gonna be on a panel on a Bill Maher panel with Riley Gaines and some other or some other right wing morons. I'm gonna get in there.
So you're being censored, huh? Aren't you, buddy? Yeah.
I am.
So we do that, right? And he just gets like creepier and creepier, especially closer we get to Christmas.
I'll tell you what I can relate very strongly to, though, is the obsession over the costume. Like working on his costume to get it just right, you know?
Me too. And he still made a Mrs. Claus costume. There's too much drape.
Yeah.
But it's a beautiful costume. He does a good job. My first qualm, though, about that is, the man, if it were me, because you said to get the costume right, and I'm that obsessed with Christmas, and seemingly this hasn't.
Well, we're costume guys.
I haven't.
That it's devil's in the details.
I would have probably had that. I get for points of the movie, it makes a better drama. I probably would have had a doped out Santa costume with one of my paychecks at a certain point than just making it then with the things I have in my house.
I don't know. I think his Santa costume's pretty good.
It's good.
He's got real fur on the.
No, I didn't mean it wasn't good. I'm saying he should have had one already.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
It's too close to Christmas for him to still be working on it, kind of, you mean?
Yeah, like this man, in my mind, this is the like fifth Santa costume he's made. Mm-hmm. And it's because if that were, I'm just saying, we're that into it, right? I have the pajamas. Why don't I have a Santa suit?
Yeah, that's true.
That's my.
And like I said, but you might be right. But maybe he's had some. But this is his like final form. So yeah, that's another. I talked about John Doe, but that's another vibe, a serial killer movie vibe that I got from this is Red Dragon. Like this is Harry's becoming, but he doesn't become a dragon. He becomes Santa Claus.
Well, he has that great. And I hate using something like Joker as a comparison, but like that's because there's better movies than that.
Like Red Dragon.
Like Red Dragon, but no, like there's some really good mirror, like incel mirror work with it because he's that great when he spirit gums. I assume it's spirit gum.
He has the best spirit gum. That beard stays on like the rest of the movie, basically.
He pulls it, and he's like, he's so happy that he finally gets the Santa beard. But it's funny. There's one little, I think it's just the actor fixing it. It looked like this one little piece kind of clips off at first, and you see him go back up to tuck it back in, and I was like, ooh, I wonder if that was just guy in character being like fixing because it works. It's like, put it, we've been, like you said, we're costume because, oh, no, it's not quite right. I got to keep going. So but he does that. But we see him building this costume, and it takes a couple of days too, which is really cool, right? It
doesn't. Well, I get the impression that that's the thing that, like, another thing where it's like we might not be seeing it chronologically. He's been working on it, you know what I mean? We're seeing the end of it, but he's probably been working on it for a while. We see him finish, kind of doing more finishing touches, probably.
Yeah. But one of the first cracks, I would say, big cracks of his, like, I'm gonna freak out as he passes the kids. All hanging out, and the neighbor kids apparently all love him because he probably gives them toys. Like, he probably gives them toys.
The kids don't like him, even Moss Garcia. He is creepy. He also compliments the little girl about how, like, pretty she looks.
Oh, you look very pretty.
It's innocent, but it's still, you're kind of like, you could have said something else. You could have just worded it better.
But I think it's played purposely like that because later on, he also has her picture and he's talking to her. And when he goes to write Moss, I should have, like, right at the scene. When he goes to write more about Moss Garcia and read about him, he puts her picture down. I'm like, oh, you can't see this. Like, it.
Also, in the deleted, this is another thing from deleted scenes. He's doing something. He's on the phone or something. You see him drawing like a hangman, and then he writes Moss Garcia underneath it.
So he really,
and then he like scratches it out. Like, he doesn't, like, you can tell he's struggling. He's upset. He's not living up to the Santa code.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. In his mind. The idea of, like, being mad at Moss Garcia or hurting Moss Garcia doesn't, that like chips away at him getting close to being the Santa he wants to be, you know? He's like mad about that part of himself.
Yeah, I wish that was included because
Something that deleted scenes, for sure. I'm glad I watched them. I had not watched them before.
He goes to the, goes back in the first, like I said, real crux is when he's hiding. When he goes to Moss Garcia and puts the mud on his face, and it's just to me crazy behavior. He makes the face, the hands against the wall.
Well, it's like he's getting a little too close. You know what I mean? It's like he's starting to.
And he hides behind the bush, and then he scares Moss Garcia when he goes to walk to the bushes. But Tim Allen's wife is like, "Get the fuck back here."
She smacks the shit out of
it. Shit, it was jarring.
Her like, she's basically just like, there's somebody over there. She's like, no, there's not.
And then I, like, she gives the look like, no, okay. Drives away. And I think that is, to me, I'm like, that's when he gets the full-blown thing. Because then we go kind of right into the Christmas party at the toy factory. And at the Christmas party... This is the catalyst that learns everything. So the big thing is they're going to donate to the
Before we do that, can I talk about how he's getting ready for the party and he's like gearing up. He just did the thing with Moss Garcia. So he's like, he's getting in his Santa vibes, you know, he's feeling himself and he's looking in the mirror and he's kind of giddy. And then he does the like, and he puts on his hairy face because he has to go. And be hairy at the Christmas party. He has to hide Santa away. Mm-hmm. But he's almost completely Santa in his mind. You know what I mean? Like, he's really on the verge.
He's just like, I gotta be serious. I gotta put up these people.
And then, man, I love the Christmas party. I love everything about it. I love the video of the owner from a clearly tropical location.
Yeah.
Telling them about how the way they can help charity is by producing more and doing and making more. And then... the whole thing about how they want the workers to donate the money for the charity instead of the company. It's like, there's all these different ways that they're like squeezing the spirit out of Christmas and like, you know, doing all this stuff that's pissing Harry off. I love it.
it's sadistic.
Yeah.
And
then you were talking about, go ahead and you can talk about the donation too.
Oh, well that's what I was getting at. So that's the donation and, part of the Christmas party we did fail to mention that comes in later is because he's a pushover and it's just the way to show is like there's a guy at work being like, you like working the factory so much, do my shift. And he sees him in the bar later and he has another freak out. This comes into play later.
Yeah. Yeah. The bully from work is also, yeah, like that's part of like his whole like being downtrodden at his job.
And his, and like a guy comes up to him at the Christmas party and is just like, huh. I forget the guy's name. He's like, oh, Rich is telling everyone about how you love the shift, like really rubbing it in his face. Cause
yeah,
But no, he gets in kind of a just conversation with a couple of the management heads, the people on the business side of the Hollywood
Project. Like his boss and then like a new promotion guy who's like, yeah. Who is the guy who had the idea to do this toy donation.
And they're
they
like,
actually use, they kind of use a real world thing here. I don't know how much you know about this. In the movie, it's the Willoughby Mental Hospital or whatever. Mm-hmm. They're going to make a donation to. And you see some clips on the TV about this like horrifically run place where they take shitty care of everybody. That was a real thing that happened. It was called the Willowbrook Mental Hospital. It was an expose that was done by Geraldo, but it was legitimately this like home for mentally challenged people and schizophrenics and stuff. But it was just like a cat house where they threw people in. Mm. People were naked, shitting on the wall, spreading on the walls. It was just like, people were getting beat. And it was like this horrible place where they just like shunned these like outcasts of society. Mm. And it got exposed like kind of around this time. So that's what they're playing on with the Willoughby, and the clips that they show are actually from the Geraldo thing. Like of like basically naked mental patients wandering around and shit.
Yeah, no, I had no idea of that. The reality of that, so it's an interesting tie-in.
But the idea is that the supposedly the company is going to donate toys to them.
Mm-hmm. And they get that, and they also reveal to him in this scenario or this conversation, essentially, hey, we can let you in on it. It's a bit of a scam. We're actually not. We're going to all benefit from it, but like. And it's
good publicity and blah, 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 blah.
This pisses him off. I mean, he doesn't just go back home. He goes to the factory, steals every toy he possibly can off the production line, then breaks into what I believe is his brother's house. Because they show the two boys sleeping in the bed.
Yeah, because it's pretty much... Yeah, like from here, the next time we see him, he goes full Santa.
Yeah, but he's not Santa. I think he goes into the... No, he is Santa. He goes home, puts the Santa stuff on, goes to his brother's house, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
Steals some of their toys. Because
it's the iconic shot of like him full Santa suit, and he has like a butcher knife, but he just uses it to cut open the pack. Like he's packed sound
he's
together.
He's cutting up, and he's putting some other ones in, and I like the scene he opens up one of his toys... And laughs because it's already broken in the package.
We touched on it, but like he actually is also, again, like he's doing all the Santa shit, which also means making his own toys. See him pouring the lead soldiers. We see him in the deleted scenes. You see him carving dolls and making marionettes. And you also see
that's
a dollhouse.
That's why he had all that shit all around
his... He's putting all that out at the brother's kid's house. You see him put out a lot more of toys that are like not the jolly, not the shitty
so
ones.
So he's replacing
them. He actually made.
And that's neat. So that adds to it because you have that scene. It seems so out of place in his house and all the dolls.
Like he's been doing a lot more. There's also something before we get too much into because like, we're about to start the actual like Santa-ing part. Mm-hmm. Before we do that, at the company Christmas party, there's one more important thing that they talk about that we need to touch on, and that is the tune. Harry keeps talking about how he can't find the right tune.
You're right, yeah.
And for years he's been trying to find the right tune, and he's almost got it, and he's almost there, and he's almost honed it in, the tune. And he's, like, weirding out this guy he's talking to. It's, like, before the bosses walk up. And then when he's talking to the bosses, you can see the guy he was talking to in the back of the room telling some other people all, like,
that's odd. That's a good detail.
Yeah, the guy walks away from having this weird conversation with Harry, and you see him in the background just, like, talking to some other people about how weird Harry's being in the tune.
I would be the same way. Be like, yo, Brian was mentioning this thing about this tune. I don't know. It was
about
weird.
Playing the tune. And then he brings it up when he's talking to the bosses, too. Because when he gets all mad, that's what he says. He's like, you wouldn't know the tune. And you know it, but you're using it for all the wrong reasons or whatever.
It's this guy like has a very, like, as you said, like this rules he has of this Christmas and the way things are. If you don't respect, if you show you're not respecting the value of Santa Claus and Christmas,
of Christmas of like giving and like the spirit of Christmas, Well, and that's the thing, the tune it's kind of got multiple meanings, like the way he uses it, because he brings it back later, and it's just an interesting concept. It's like
the idea of him, it's like the idea of him finding himself.
Well,
he's finding his, he thinks in his mind everybody else has like figured themselves out and they're all dancing to the tune, but he never really kind of got it. But now that he's like about to become Santa, that's him like finding his tune, I guess.
Do you think it also has a value to also what his like mother represents as well, and like his father disrespected that tune to him because he also looks the same?
Well, yeah, I think that's his, part of it, that like he saw his father defiling the idea, this perfect ideal of what Santa is, and like so he's gonna like replace that, he's gonna live up to that now.
Yeah, so but I like what you said there. It's like everyone else has figured out in his mind, and you have like,
yeah,
like I don't know, I've had conversations with people like, oh, you got, you know, and you figured it out, you got together, and like virtually every human being in the world is like, nah, I'm still figuring it out to this, you know, whatever, yeah, it is this day. We're just,
yeah, but the idea of him, like, he's almost got his calling, like he's almost got it honed in, he's got the, he's doing the list, he's making the toys, he's got his suit, he's almost there, you know.
And he gets a Santa moment. So he does this right, and I'm gonna go right to the Santa part of
yeah, now he's in his full regalia, long red coat. I like the length of the red coat.
So
that's
our disagreement. I like the fur and everything. The length of the coat when he's dancing, it's a little too, it reminds me of Mrs. Claus's that you see.
Okay, I can see
the Santa jacket, but it's a very well made thing.
And now, would you like it a little better if it was like Kurt Russell in those Santa Chronicles, where it's like an open duster almost?
A little more, yeah, a little more tapered, I think. Yeah, not full blown duster. That's like cool, but like,
yeah,
I don't know.
Well, like even if the like the coat he has now with the all the same, but like wear it more open so you can kind of see his Santa outfit underneath it.
I think that's where there was something awkward about. It's in the dancing scene when you get the full thing. It,
yeah.
And it's a very minor complaint. It's not a complaint even at all.
No. So,
I'd kill for that Santa. I have to be, I'm Santa Claus.
That Santa costume's incredible. His dad, the one his dad wears is a real bar crawl, yeah, $30 piece of shit.
Like. Yeah, because it's 1930 or whatever. Yeah. And his dad probably barely made it. It was because this is a nice thing I do. I get to fuck my wife. And it, she loves it. Yeah, I got one of those. It was a full set. I have a fake fat. I got a fat stomach.
One day when I have to be Santa, I'm gonna get a nice one, like Christmas Evil style.
Yeah, that's. I'll help you fund that. Mm-hmm. So we do that, and then he drives to the children's hospital. Like he does drive over to the children's hospital. And drop. They're like, "Who are you?"
I like how they're appropriately weirded out at
first.
They're
weirded out, but then they're like, "Okay, they're thrilled." And
he's trying to do the right thing, but he can't help his mental illness. So like his like he'll accidentally get too aggressive, and then he like tries to real like he's really trying to be Santa, but like his sickness kind of is always creeping out a little bit. Like he gets easily frustrated with people who don't just like let him be Santa.
Yeah,
you know,
let me be joyful. Yeah, you just take it. But he, you know, he gives them, it goes smoothly. Nothing bad happens, truly.
Oh, it's a great moment, and he's feeling great. He's vibing real good. So since he's vibing so good, he thinks he's going to go maybe find that young executive that pissed him off with a bad idea coming out of church.
Except for truly death. you know, nothing goes too bad. Theft, not death. But yeah, so he goes over to the church. The executive,
and he's waiting. I love the way he's like watching, looking at the crowd. But he can't, before he can find the guy that he's actually looking for, some yuppies come up and start fucking with him.
Mm-hmm. And they're like, nice suit, Sand. You know, they're smarmy. But yeah, he pulls out
there's still smarmy pricks.
He pulls out a toy soldier with a big freaking needle in it.
It's got a giant bayonet. Jams right into dude's eye.
And we get some nice, I like the gore effects too. I like the red. I like the like paint red this movie uses. It fits the era.
There's not a ton of gore, but there's a couple times that they do some pretty fun stuff.
And it's stylized.
And he also, he not only stabs that guy, but then he uses what I'm pretty sure is like a toy tomahawk.
Mm-hmm.
to then cave in the heads of like two other people. I think
he sharpened up that tomahawk. Yeah. Because that's the main.
It's either sharp or it's heavier than it looks. Because he really bashes him.
Yeah, and he gets all four. Like, it's crazy to.
He gets 3 out of 4. The girl who was like, oh, leave him alone, doesn't get it.
But it's crazy to see, like, all of the bodies laying around because it's like someone could have, like, hobbled that guy. Could you imagine
just, like, a crowd of people just standing there watching Santa go ham on three people like that? Nobody does anything?
No. I mean, he just gets back in his right van and drives away. I love this
van so much, dude.
It's so R-wordy. It's so, like, he paints the sleigh on it. I love it. And they make fun of his van, too. They're like, wow, really changed your reindeers there, Santa.
Had to, get with the modern times.
I mean, those guys are dicks. But, yeah, he really goes, that's really the killing. But the way they use blood in this, it's very Argento kind of red. Sure. And that Technicolor, the movie's not Technicolor, but when you have the red, it really
kind of that Hammer horror style.
Like Hammer horror, not Technicolor. Yeah.
I love the swings here because so he had his like his fun moment dropping off toys, and then he goes and does a murder, and now he's like creeping around. He sees a holiday party, right? Yeah. And he's just like peeping in the window at this holiday party. And some dudes who are drunk see him and are like, a Santa Claus is here. They get all excited and they drag him in. Now, I had one of my favorite games to play is when I spot a character actor trying to figure out what I know him from and where.
You notice one?
Guys, this one I caught right away. One of the guys who drags Santa in for the party is Mark Margolis, and that is Hector LaMonca from Breaking Bad and from Better Call Saul.
That name sounds.
He's got like a very distinct face, even though he's a much younger man in this.
He's in this. Yeah. Shit. Okay. Good eye. Yeah. Great eye.
I was like, I saw him and I was like, that's gotta be. And is that I looked him up. It's way down in the credits and on the IMDb as man number 2, but he's in there.
That's a real Jeff Goldblum in Death Wish.
Yeah, that kind of pull.
Like, just, you know it. That's, I guess, a pretty popular one. But, like, he's, like, flunky number 4 or something like that.
Real Nick Cage in Fast Times at Ridgemont High kind of stuff.
Nicholas Coppola. No, good eye. Great eye there. But, yeah, I love that scene, too, because that's when he really thrives as Santa, right? Like, they embrace him. He's dancing.
Oh, yeah, although... I have to say, one of the times I'm most unsettled is when he's interacting with the kids.
Well,
you know he's capable of such violence, and you know that that's like right on the edge at all times for him. It's really like upsetting to see him, I don't ever get the impression he's gonna harm any kids. You know,
no, the kids become in multiple scenes his protectors almost, and he relies on them. Like he, in that scene, I think that is the creepiest part is talking about it because he does, they're fucking love him. He's like, and he's so proud of himself because he nails the Santa voice and the cadence that he's been working on in the mirror and in private, and he gets it right. He gives the, I don't know if he does a ho ho ho, but he basically just does the whole shtick. But then he's like, all right, children, now follow your parents, your teachers. Basically just be obedient, which is also a crazy thing to just throw out there. But then it gets weird when he's just like, and don't you guys be fucking bad or else I will find you and I will harm you. So one thing we didn't mention it. I wonder if there's a deleted scene of this because it doesn't really come into play is he fills up one of his Santa sacks with dirt.
Yeah,
it never comes into play.
Instead of giving coal, that's what he leaves for Moss Garcia.
Yeah,
instead of coal, it's like a big bag of dirt.
Yeah,
so, I don't know if that's just a different Santa myth that I'm less familiar with.
No,
maybe.
he just didn't
have ready access to coal.
It's just played as such an important like part of like, okay, now I'm digging out shit, and it's never really played up. But back to that, so it's a creep moment, and then this is when he leaves. Now he's gonna go back, and then he goes to his co-worker's house, right? To
slit his throat. This is like, again, the more juiced up he gets at Santa and the more in his own like vibe that he gets, the more likely he is to go do a murder, I guess.
He's doing a murder. Like, he does a good
thing.
This is
the second time in a row where after doing a big Santa, he has to go do a murder.
He does his last murder of the night, which is his coworker.
His bully coworker. I like that he attempts the chimney thing here.
Oh,
he tries to go down the chimney. And they really make a meal out of it. It's really fun. Like, it takes him. This is probably maybe the funniest moment in the movie him, like, trying to squeeze himself into the chimney.
Squeeze himself into it. I mean, and even, like, I'm like, oh, man, even the ladder he's using. I'm like, the snow, the ladder, till you're going to fall and die.
No, go ahead.
I was just saying, yeah, he gets himself. It is a comedy beat. He's trying to do the chimney to go down and. But he can't fit through.
There's an interesting level of like realistic, like he's deluded clearly, and he has this thing that he's gonna be Santa, but he also knows that he's not magic and that he can't. It's like the van thing. He has these practical solutions. Like, well, he's making a list and checking it twice, but he knows he can't do every kid in the world. So he's just like, I can do the kids in my neighborhood. So that's what I'm gonna focus on.
He's Bruce Almighty-ing it, right? He could hear everyone's thoughts in a 2 mile, in a 2 block radius.
He can only focus on that many kids. So that's what I like. This is another point. This is another, the chimney thing was another set of that where it's like, he has his limitations, but he doesn't let it keep him from following his dreams, you know?
It's the moral is to follow your dreams. But it also is a movie that does a good thing in the sense of, like you said, doesn't go fantastical. It doesn't become, a Vampire's Kiss or American Psycho, where we're seeing the fantastical elements of killings and things that are become too improbable, right? Like you watch American Psycho or you watch Vampire's Kiss, and it's like.
We'll talk about it because I do think there maybe there's a touch of that coming up into the end.
The ending has that quite a bit, but
I know exactly what you mean. Like he still,
but if this was those movies, right?
And he would have just gone down the chimney.
Like, he'd gone down the chimney, and he would have been like, "Great!" Yeah. And picked up a shiny axe and went through. So he.
Instead, he has to crawl in through the basement window like a little grub.
Yeah, and like it's like devaluing yourself. It's like, oh, you're still a little bitch.
Yeah, yeah, you're not fucking magic. You're not Santa. You're a dirty little murderer. So crawl in here and do your dirty little murder.
The movie doesn't want you to think this man is a hero, but you know they do want you to feel bad for him at a certain point.
They want you to empathize with him and understand that he's sick and that he's like mind, you know.
It's not I don't think it's a slasher.
I think that's why the Willoughby stuff is in there too, is to like connect you to that idea that like this is a person who needs help.
Yes.
You know.
That's a good connection. But yeah, so he does that and he tries to suffocate him and realizing it's not working.
Realizing that the dude is like twice his size. I was like, you're about to get throttled. I'd chuck your ass across the room if you try that shit on me. I'll bench press you up to the ceiling.
He, in probably one of the more sadistic killings in a movie like this, because he slashes, and by sadistic, I mean, he slashes his throat and then throws it on his wife.
Somehow didn't wake up while her 250-pound husband
was
thrashing in the bed next to her. She didn't wake up from that. But when he like gets his throat cut and flops over onto her, that's finally. I did like, though, much like with the toy, the Tin Soldier and the toy Tomahawk, he's using a Christmas-themed weapons to do his murdering. Mm-hmm. He's using the star from the Christmas tree to slash dude's throat. That's fun, right? Yeah. It's like, you know, we like that.
Yeah, we like a good theme.
We always like if you're going to be a killer with a theme, stay on theme, you know? Yeah.
like don't use a chainsaw.
No. Unless you're already using that chainsaw to cut down a Christmas tree.
Maybe that was the wrong. Don't use a samurai sword. I mean, that's a little bit.
There you go.
Or a hammer or something like that. I get it. You can use a hammer to hang stockings, but like, bear with me here. So anyway, he goes that, and then he just there. We get to his brother's again. There's a news report,
and I love this.
like now it's Christmas, well, morning now, Christmas Eve. Yeah. Now it's Christmas morning. We see the brother's house. His kids have been up. They've opened their presents. They're watching TV. He's like, he knows something's up because Harry's not there. Like, this is Harry's day. Christmas is Harry's thing.
I'm sure he should be here by now.
I haven't heard from him. You know, he was nothing on Christmas Eve, nothing on Christmas Day. Something's going on.
And he's like, it's him. I mean, like,
he sees the news report and he's immediately like, I don't like this.
He's like, that's my brother. That's like, because you said there's definitely been episodes in the past and this definitely has led to where his brother's been like, I don't know, you're fucking nuts.
He definitely knows his brother is a guy who is. Who takes Christmas very seriously and like believes in it and is mentally unstable, you know. He knows that he's ignored his brother's mental illness for a long time and things could be coming to a head.
He's not, and he's right. I can't, it sucks because the brother sucks, but he's right. But Harry,
he's right, but also he didn't help Harry. You know what I mean?
He should have helped Harry.
He's not a good steward to Harry.
He's no hero.
No, like he's right about what's going on, but also all he knows to do is blame Harry and berate Harry and project on him. And like, he doesn't have any empathy for his brother. At least not that we ever see.
No, he doesn't. He never has a.
And from the impression you get from his wife, he never has. It's not like she's not like, I know you've tried and he hasn't been receptive, but you know, he's your only brother and he needs help. She's like, for once, can you not treat your brother like shit?
Yeah, no, you're nailing it with that. He's not a good brother, put it that way. I'm saying
do anything. Like, this thing has been brewing and he definitely didn't do anything to slow it down.
Yeah. But Harry makes another crazy decision. He goes back to the first thing he does in the morning, goes back to the factory.
First, he wakes up. He's in full-on Santa Hobo mode. He wakes up in, like, sleeping in the back of his van in, like, a pile of toys. He's just, like, and he sits up. He comes out all crazy. And he's, like, dirty because of trying to go in the chimney and stuff. So he's really looking crazy now.
Yeah, and he goes crazy. And he goes back to the factory works.
And he goes Citizen Kane on the factory.
Just to break the toys. Just like, ah. So he goes there. And then this is, like...
We do a quick thing. They show a Santa lineup. They show the cops are kind of
there's some, and that's kind of like comedic fun.
And I like the little like Santa history lesson that the cop kind of gives about like how Santa got popular. Although he does leave out Coca-Cola, can't leave out Coca-Cola in the history of Santa Claus.
But they did.
Yeah, they did.
Because Coca-Cola was like, we're not part of Christmas evil.
Coca-Cola's like, do not talk about us. We will sue you.
We're biblical.
We will send our child slaves to take care of you.
Speaking of child slaves, I don't know. Santa's fucking running around, and people are supposed to be on the lookout for stay away from any Santa Claus, and he bumps into.
Well, he kind of like hangs out. He kind of hangs out. And smashes up the factory and calls. He calls his brother, and he talks about the tune a little bit more. You hear he kind of like
I'm close to finding it.
And he implies that his brother doesn't remember anything about like what happened when they were kids.
Six.
Yeah, and he was like,
and also what happened?
And maybe he didn't see it because he was up in bed.
Yeah. Also, what happened is your parents just had a healthy sexual appetite and. Yeah. You saw it, but
now, granted, unfortunately, your parents weren't aware enough to like talk to you and keep you from becoming a weird repressed maniac, and that is a problem. But the actual thing that was going on between your mom and dad was not a problem.
No. So yeah, apologies for skipping that because that is important. He keeps talking about the tune. He calls him from a factory.
Yeah.
Then we get him. In front of this area, which is so many fucking snowmen.
This is weird because he looks like he's walking up to like a neighborhood in the look. This is the streets are like lined with these glowing snowmen, but then all of a sudden he's in like an alley, it seems like in the city.
It's very city.
Is where like reality starts to kind of get a little weird in the movie.
It's a city reality alleyway. I think the snowman shot's just meant to look cool at the end of the day. Like, it's a
One of the things is meant to mesmerize him and just kind of guide him.
So we come back there at a certain point too, right? Like, and but yeah, he's in this alleyway and he like these kids go, "Oh my god, Santa!"
And yeah, it's
like,
kids see Santa and of course they get excited. It's like they don't know they haven't watched the news, so they don't know to stay away from Santa Clauses.
And a guy who looks like Flea from the Red Hot Chili Peppers is like,
he also looks like the toady, the bully kid's little toady in Christmas Story, who's like his little like sidekick. He's got like the little collar and the little hat, the little button brim hat and stuff.
He's very like very scaggly. Mm-hmm. That's not a word, but I just made it up.
I know exactly what he meant. Anybody who scaggly. Wants to get in a knife fight with Santa is scaggly, okay?
Dude, this guy is like, nah, that's the fucking guy. He pulled out a switchblade.
Like, this dude's just like, any Santa that crosses my path is getting fucked up tonight.
Yeah, and his daughter comes running up. He's like, no, Dad.
His daughter totally betrays him and takes his knife and gives it to Santa. That's fucked up.
Yeah, she's like, here you go.
Like, what kind of shitty-ass dad are you that your kid just betrayed you for Santa Claus? For dirty street hobo Santa Claus?
The kids protect Santa in that scene. Like, the kids are in Sinister.
I like they create like a phalanx around him, and they move together. When he moves back, they all come back. Like they all move as one. Like,
they're standing around him, maybe because we watched it not too long ago. Like the kids are around fucking Bagul at the end.
Yeah.
He moves, and he's like, "Oh, okay." He feels, but you could see it on Harry's face. Like he feels protected.
But I do like the whole kind of town that dreaded sundown vibe of the parents when they see him. Like the kids go running up, but the parents are like, "Oh, it's Santa." You know, everybody back up, hold up. You know what I mean? I love that.
This town that dreaded sundown, I think there's a billion which that, because like that happens. He gets stabbed in the cheek by an old lady. Or
that old lady with the brooch, she's quick thinking with that brooch. She's like,
and I was like, oh, he's going to kill her. And then he just runs away because once again, Harry is also a scared man. Like he's a scared little boy. And that shows, but then they're like, there he is. And then they go like, they go full Frankenstein or Simpsons, whatever you want to call it. Angry mob.
This is, you said American Psycho. And I was thinking this time I'm watching it, I was like, that feels like a reality breaking moment to me. The villagers with the torches is like, it feels like almost a step too ridiculous.
It's a little much.
I don't dislike it, but it feels like it could kind of be Harry's finally breaking, like he's finally going over like too far over the edge, like reality, he's leaving reality behind. Mm-hmm. At this
point. And I mean, if you want to look at it that way, you're comparing it to it is like we're talking about like Frankenstein in that sense. Like it is literary, you know, the angry mob that has, I mean, they have literal torches.
Yeah.
They're running with that don't flame out, that don't burn the stick down. I mean, they are professional.
And it's like, for a lot of it, you don't see them in the same shot with Harry. It's not like you see them really behind him. It's like they'll do some shots of them and then him hiding or him.
No, so it's comedic. He runs down the alleyway and they run past that way. Yeah. And then he gets out of there.
That could be almost like a persecution thing in his mind. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, he's hiding, they run by. Are they even really there? Or is he just so paranoid about what happened and that he just assumes everybody's after him? I'm not saying that's the case, but I could see that interpretation being in there.
No, I'm with you. I like thinking of it that way because it does go, because then he runs, then truly we go right to his brother's home. And
he gets away from the
he gets away from the mob. He's able to get back to his van.
Yeah, he gets back to his van and he gets to his brother's house.
By the way, I don't know how, if that mob is real, one person and see that van and be like, that's definitely his van. I'm going to at least pop his tires.
Yeah, absolutely. You shouldn't let him. I mean, come on. It's got a big sleigh painted on the side. It clearly is.
But he does get in the van and he rides to his brother's house, shows up, and his brother's like, you mother... Like,
he like immediately is like, of course it was you.
Yeah, that's actually, it's like, get away, of course it's you. And his brother, and
this... Well, Harry's like blaming and he's projecting on his brother, like, basically all the shit I did is your fault for not supporting me.
And it's for you, and I found the tune.
And like I did it to help, to make you believe, kind of, or like to make it real or something.
And his brother... and like I say, he's not a good brother. I almost don't blame him.
No, I don't want to start. Also, rightly so. On the flip side of this, I know I've been hard on him. It's also difficult to have someone like this in your life.
Mm-hmm.
And he's probably put up with a lot in his life. And being the younger brother and having to take responsibility for someone who should be able to take care of themselves mm-hmm. better can be frustrating.
Yeah. He starts...
straight up choke bitch.
He just starts strangling him. And he gets... You think he kills him, but he gets him to pass out because he does a smart thing, though. I mean, his wife is cowering in fear on the side and like, what else is she going to do? But he drags him. He puts him back in his van. And I think his thought was, I'm just going to call the cops and say he drove to my van and this is the guy. But Harry wakes up, driving away.
Does a cartoon punch like Thor, like when Hulk punches Thor in the Avengers, where it's like, ping, out the window.
Gets on his merry way. And this is
another point. Because we get, you know, he drives off, Phil's chasing him, the torch-bearing crowd returns.
And this is
another thing that made me think it was that, like, the torch-bearing crowd, the villagers, are, like, a sign of reality breaking, or, like, a sign of, like, unreal, because he veers off the road, and then the sleigh van takes off. And he crashes into the sky.
It's in his head. He's laughing. He's finally happened. I just took it off. He just drove himself off the bridge. And it's his stumbling the wheeze moment.
Yeah. But I like the idea that, like, in his mind, like, the torch, you know, the torch-bearing crowd coming back is, like, a signal that we're not seeing reality. So that when the
release
man takes off and flies away, we're in the same, you know, we're kind of in the same mindset of that.
Yeah. It's funny. It's good. Like I said, I took it for what I was just like, oh,
no, I mean, this is like me with like four or five watches under my belt over the last couple of years, just trying to bring a little extra conversation to it. It's very much could just be very straightforward. And he drives off the bridge and dies, but in his mind, he flies away. Yeah. You know, and that's fine. Like,
because to me, I'm like, it's a little like, I like where you're going with it, though. Because, like, the comparison of this movie, right, of the time to is Taxi Driver, right? It's your character portrait, it's your this. It's less vague. It's less vague than the ending of Taxi Driver, right? Travis Bickle, how to have died, but we get his ending of him writing, you know,
that he's actually a hero, and
And this to me is like him driving off and the flying away and laughing about it, and
right, it's like him, the culmination of becoming, so like I said, his Red Dragon moment. He is becoming. His sleigh actually flies.
It's such a sad and well depiction of, or like the horror depiction of the mental illness in self story that, like, it's slightly better because of all this stuff and what we see and we go through. It is slightly better than just like, oh, it's a sleazy, trashy movie. And I think because that's known as, you know,
in a sense. And you know what? I can get that because the vibe of it is so kind of like dirty and kind of grimy. It does have that kind
of
like
some of the sex stuff in it.
It's unsettling. You know what I mean? It makes you feel, because it makes you feel dirty, I can see why people would call it sleazy, although I don't think I would call it sleazy. No. I don't think it's not like an exploitation movie.
No, it's not like another movie like I guess that gets compared to like this, but I would call this one sleazy. It's not like a Maniac, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there you go. That's a good one. Or like Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer.
Yep. You're taking it like very like, ooh, those are hard, dirty, you feel gross
movies.
This is just, I explained it to Laura when it finished. She's like, huh? And I go, yeah. I go, that was just kind of fucking sad. Like, at the
right. Exactly. It's like I said. It's unsettling. No, it leaves you kind of unsettled, like unwell. You feel like you've been through some kind of like mental illness.
You do go on this journey with this guy, and you do get a. I like the way the story is told too. We don't just get Christmas Eve and Christmas Day. We get the full.
We see some buildup. Yeah, we're all the way back to before Thanksgiving. Yeah,
and I mean that's kind of where we're at now. Where that is the start of Christmas season for a lot of people. Of I don't put stuff up until Black Friday, right? Or like whatever. And so I like that we get that and get this man's full, because you're not going to crack 55 days before Christmas.
No.
But 10.
Well, and the build, and we all know that there's just extra pressure as Christmas closes in for regular people, let alone somebody who is like hyper focused on becoming the ideal version of Santa, you know? By whatever means necessary.
I'm Santo. But yeah, man, I'm glad you picked this movie. I also think we covered a lot of ground with it. Do you have anything?
Yeah, to add? Hope so. I was, I didn't want to overdo it, but
no, any notes? Thorough.
It's a movie, like I said, it's one that I had never seen up until a couple of years ago, and I really enjoyed it the first time, and it stuck with me. And on subsequent rewatches, I always get a little bit more out of it, and. I think it's a little more than its reputation, like you're talking about. I think it's a little better than that, actually.
I
like that it has that cult status because it brings eyes to it and stuff, but I hope people give it a little more respect, you know?
I think it deserves a little more respect, especially compare. Like, I hate that I keep comparing this movie to other movies.
But especially slasher genre.
Especially since, like we talked about earlier in the pod, like when you recommended it, like my brain immediately went to like the Silent Night, Deadly Night series. I'm not that big a fan of them. Like, I think they're really overrated. They're kind of boring. This had a lot of interesting shit to it. It reminds me a lot of a movie you recommended for me a couple of years ago of the Dark Knight of the Scarecrow.
Ooh, yeah.
Right. Like that's not the movie you think you're going to see. It's a lot more thoughtful in the way it tells its story. For myself too, like if I came to this, like the recording originally, it was into where like, oh, I tried to watch it at work and I gave it my attention, but I got the idea. I would have had a much different tune I was singing. But when I came home and actually sat down and I really watched it, I'm like, oh no, this is pretty damn good.
Mm-hmm.
Like I gave it 3.5 out of 5 on Letterboxd. It was
Like I said, I think there's just at bare minimum, however you come out, whether you like it or not, to acknowledge there's more going on here than your average Christmas horror movie.
It's do a little bit of different. I say this too much. Do a little editing tweaks. Put it this way. It's a character study. You'd have all the A24 bros over the moon if this was fucking released right now.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
No, but you don't understand. He thinks he's becoming Santa. Like, I hear the film bro debate right now, and I'm like, I don't disagree.
Yeah.
Anyway, anything, like I said, anything in your notes that you want to jump off before we sign out?
No, I was just glancing over them again. I think there's a couple little moments at the very, very end that I just love when the van is getting ready to take off. First of all, the actual toy van that you see flying away in front of the moon is so great. I love it. Little miniature toy van flying away. Also, Phil's chasing him, and right at the very end, he slips and, like, the snow carpet they use to make it look like there was snow on the ground shifts under him, and he like slides with it and stuff. And there's a couple different times where like they clearly didn't have as much snow as they wanted, and they had to put down some of those carpets. And when he's walking around, you can kind of tell.
That was a good eye. I could end this on a good fun fact that I just remembered is, I believe all the snow was just shaved plastic bags and plastic and stuff like that. So.
Yeah, there's definitely that, and then, like I said, some areas where they, like, threw down some, like, carpety kind of stuff to give it the white look. But, no, I appreciate you letting me bring this one.
Always.
I don't purposely try to use this show as a way to get my horror favorites on, but I like it for that.
You should, because I should, too. Having said that, I hope everyone has a merry, merryful, frightful.
You have to. You can't say Merry Christmas. It's illegal, actually.
Yeah, I know. Merry. I was.
You have to say Happy Holidays or the Gestapo.
Oh, no, I was going for Merry Frightful, like how we say Stay Frightful, everyone. Not Merry. Merry have a Merry Frightful holidays. And we'll see you all either, you know, right in the new year with whatever episode we have released, because we didn't film it yet.
This will be on around Christmas. Who knows what'll be out that after that or before it even.
Bye.
Bye.
Welcome to Flyover State of Fear.